You stop time when they hear your voice in amongst the 200 other short clips of their script. And suddenly you stand out. It's your job to stop time when they hear your voice. And you're most likely to do that by being authentic.
And that was the voice of Brad Giffin, or Brad Avenue, depending on what he's up to. We're going to talk about how a seasoned professional can take a broadcast career and turn it into a voiceover career in their retirement. Take a listen. Well, hello, Brad. Welcome to the show. So good to see you.
Stephanie, it's so good to be here. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh my gosh. Just always a lot of fun to see you, Brad. So we're grateful that you're here and to share your story. And you have quite a long career in broadcast before you came into voiceover. And you've made voiceover like your retirement career as well. So
Yeah. Could
you tell us just how did you, you know, get to where you are now? Because obviously this career in voiceover is as an extension of a 40-year career that began in broadcast.
Yeah, I really think you've hit the nail on the head exactly there. It's an extension rather than a retirement career. It's really an extension of what I've been doing for almost 40 years, starting off with radio. I was born in Toronto, right out of a university, drawn to radio, which led to radio stations in central Ontario. And then I returned to Toronto 3 years later to begin a career as a commercial actor, followed by hosting music programs with the CBC and City TV, one of those, a daily show I hosted at the dawn of TV music videos called Toronto Rocks. And those are still on YouTube, some of the programs, some of the episodes. It was great fun back in those days in the 80s. 3 years later, by happy accident, I was back to my first love, radio, when I was invited to join Chum FM Toronto, which, along with 1050 Chum, or two of the radio powerhouses in North America. And in 1990, I made a major break from entertainment programming to transition to news as a reporter for Toronto's most watched daily news station, CFTO, later known as CTV Toronto. 3 years later, with the help of the William Morris Agency and a helping hand from my friend John Roberts, who he and I worked at City TV, I was anchoring and reporting daily newscasts, first with Fox News in Salt Lake City, followed by ABC News in New Orleans, and later still ABC News in Sarasota, which is part of the top 10 Tampa TV market. And in 2008, I returned home to family in Toronto to anchor news with CTV Toronto and Canada AM when it was still alive and running, and for 10 years, CTV News Channel. But in 2015, after 25 years in news, I was ready for a change, and I began considering retiring, the R word, but, you know, I was still too young to pack things in completely, and it dawned on me that one of my earliest loves, voicing commercials and promos as part of my announcer duties with Chum FM, still appealed to me. So while I was still anchoring news with CTV News Channel, I quietly took acting classes, voice coaching, business courses to launch my career as a voice talent 3 years later in 2018, when I said goodbye to news. And so now 9 years as a voice talent, the past five of those years full-time. I love it, Stephanie. It's been great. And Voices.com has certainly been a huge help in my career as well.
Oh, thank you for sharing. That is like an astounding, like, I'm sure people are thinking, wow, what an amazing career Brad's had. And and they're probably even like, I know that voice. I know I've heard him before. I grew up with him or whatnot, right? So I know in your career when you were on TV and radio and like anchoring and doing all this stuff, like your name was Brad Giffin. That's your given name.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's how people know you. But in voiceover land, you're Brad Avenue. So why don't you share a little bit about how you came to make that decision and why?
Well, the reason why was because primarily I didn't want casting directors to be mistaking the guy who was reading news as the guy who might be able to do something other than a news read. So primarily that was the reason. So that's what my agent that I was signed with at the time went with as well. So jobs began coming in as being directed to Brad Avenue. That was a good thing. And even after I left news, of course, Brad Avenue was established. So there was no point changing horses midstream. And so it has remained. But The simple reason why I chose Avenue, A-V-E-N-Y-O-U, was simply because I live on Avenue Road in Toronto, and I thought, in amongst all the other things when you're establishing a business, gosh, the last thing you wanted, now what am I going to call myself?
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, something that's going to end up at the top of most agents' rosters, something that's easy to remember, for better or worse, Avenue. And I thought, well, you know what? I live on Avenue Road. I'm just going to make it Avenue and just change the spelling of Avenue to Avenue. To make it easy,
Yeah. Check
that off the box and move on to one of the other things that are necessary in establishing a business.
Well, how strategic, because you would be at the top of any alphabetized list, like, you know, with your first name, but then with an avenue there, right? Like that,
right.
That makes sense. I mean, everyone remembers back in school, roll call was always alphabetical order, right? Like you kind of knew that. They'd sometimes reverse the order just to get things, you know, a little different. Give
yes.
the kids at the end of the alphabet a leg up. But, you know, that's interesting. But also, I think when we were talking before, you mentioned, and you kind of talked about it a little bit just now, but how being a news anchor and a broadcaster, like you have a very, I would say, like a persona that is, it gives you the facts, the news. There's no bias, or at least that's what one would hope, right, in the world of news. So you couldn't necessarily, you know, maintain like your personality. That name was so well known in the community, in the broadcast community, and in our country, that you had to like say, okay, well, Brad Giffin belongs to, you know, this channel and how people knew me, but because I want to pursue voiceover and I want to tell stories, I want to get into the fun parts of the acting world, I can't necessarily bring the news anchor in with it too. So that was strategic.
Yeah, that was strategic in the sense that, again, I didn't want casting directors to think that a news read was the only thing that I could do, even though News Channel was very relaxed and very natural. But the other aspect, too, you know, was the potential conflict of interest. I just became a different persona.
And that is wise and smart, kind of like a stage name. Some people are more familiar with the idea of a stage name. It seems like that might have been, but you have a business now where that is your identity and that's what you're doing. And that's really, really interesting, I think. So as we go along, and I know you have a long track record in the arts, and so just want to ask you, what skills that you had developed during your broadcast career have you found useful in your career as a voiceover talent?
That's a good question. I know my way around a mic, and I know my way around a camera, I guess. In fact, I look back and I realize that just about every room I ever worked in since I was 20 years old had at least one mic and usually three or more studio cameras. News reporting taught me the essential building blocks of good storytelling. Radio taught me the power of a microphone and the art of speaking to hundreds of thousands of people, but relating to them one by one, very, very important. Radio is very, you know, intimate. The solitude of a studio where radio or television studios are prepared me for the extended periods of time that we spend in our voice booths at home. And I also sight read very quickly. So, you know, all those kind of skills came from doing what I did.
Sight reading. Some people really don't like to have to just rip and read, right? But
oh,
for you,
yeah.
That was something that just came naturally.
It's a fact of life, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, just give us an idea. Like, just how often would something just appear in front of your face and you'd have to read it, like, right then and there and have just perfect delivery, basically?
Back in the day, they used to actually write scripts and it would arrive to the anchor on hard copy. And the anchor or production assistant would bring in this sheaf of scripts into the studio, and the news anchor would sit down and adjust and be ready to do the news. I don't think I ever did that. But it changed. And news became, instead of just, 5 or 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock at night, it became continuous.
Mm.
News gathering became continuous. News presenting became continuous. And so consequently, there was no hard copy. For instance, at CTV News Channel, it would come up in the teleprompter, right? So you see in this teleprompter, essentially 5 lines of a story at a time, and you're just praying that they've got a good writer on this story. So subject, verb, object, you know, sometimes it wasn't. And it would scroll up and you would have to be natural in presenting it, not stumble. That was part of your job. One of the great things is you would understand the story ahead of time because you're constantly researching. You're on top of the news at all times. And if you're doing news every day, there's a certain, what I call an institutional knowledge of current events that builds up within you. So as soon as you see that story coming up in the rundown, you know the basics of it, the who, what, when, where, and why of this story. So no matter what comes up in the prompter, you know the basics of the story, and if you have to, you can ad-lib your way around some of the rough points. That's probably one of the greatest skills that contemporary news reading, because I had the old way when I was in Salt Lake City with Fox, for instance. It was, you know, the great big packet of scripts. But CTV News Channel, by the time I was there, 2008, it was paperless, and everything was immediate, fast, and, you know, hopefully accurate.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's always wondered this, Brad. Maybe you can, you know, demystify it for us. But at the end of the newscast, the end of the news broadcast, and the anchor is sitting there and they are shuffling their papers and looking down, what are they actually doing? Because it's like they're just there and it's like awkward moment, camera hasn't cut yet. Like, what's going on? Like,
that's actually just theatrics.
Okay.
You know, so usually they go from the head-on shots, one, two, to an overhead shot. At that point, it's high and wide. And you've got to be doing something. You've got to do something. You can't just sit there looking at the camera you've been looking at. So, you know, your attention is now going to be turning to the other things, you know, looking busy. Yeah, it's performative.
So they gave you guys, like, ideas. Oh, now look over here. Shuffle the paper that way. Take a note. Look pensive.
You know, and that's always built right into the end of the newscast, too. And some news stations used to have that right up at the top, too.
Yeah.
To say, look, this is a busy news anchor, and he's working right up to the last second.
Oh, yes.
You know, changing or, you know, good evening, everyone. This is the latest news from Cairo. You know, so it was in fast, and that top padding at the top with the shuffling of the papers ended pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could get immediately to the news because they knew their competitors were getting straight into the news.
Right on. And it's a continuous news cycle now, as you said, and there's the teleprompter and who knows what not in the studios these days.
Yeah.
But obviously a lot of great skills came out of that. I think a control of your voice, knowing how to share information, all of those wonderful things would translate as well.
Mm.
So how much time and effort do you dedicate to voiceover and developing your craft now?
My business, Avenue Voice Services, is open 9 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday to Friday. And sometimes I'm around on weekends, too. This really is a job. And it really has to be. I mean, I've put in whatever was necessary. As a full-time gig, I'm working 9 to 9 Monday to Friday, some weekends, as I mentioned, as much time and effort as necessary to make voice a full-time career instead of just a paying hobby, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Frequent coaching, promoting, marketing, investing in my business, auditioning, working hard to develop multiple streams of voice income that now feature my three very hardworking agents, along with a handful of online casting sites, of which Voices is an important one. And of course, the projects that show up over the transom of my website, avsvoice.com. As any voice talent will tell you, you're a solopreneur who wears many hats to make voice a full-time career. So, you know, you have to treat it accordingly.
Absolutely, you do. So in your days in the studio, when you got to work with all kinds of very expensive technology, you know, at the stations you were at, did you find that inspired what you wanted to put in your own home studio?
No. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that I think beginning voice talent can do. They turn into gearheads and they think the equipment is going to make them better. No. It's all about coaching and having a decent, sonically suitable area in your home to record. And it's as simple as that. If it sounds good, it probably is good. So, you know, but I know a lot of guys who buy, you know, all the shiny objects and bells and whistles. It won't make them better. Put that money into coaching, you know. So I was never really inspired by that. Otherwise, I'd have four cameras in here and, you know, a 15-foot ceiling.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, because everybody wonders about that because you're surrounded by amazing gear. Like, I'm just thinking my husband, David, whom you know, he, you know, went to this amazing recording school, and they just like, you know, pictures of the stuff you see in there. It looks like the Starship Enterprise. Like, it's crazy, full out tech. But for someone to be able to afford any of these sort of things, like certainly 20, 30 years ago, was just like, you just couldn't. Like, unless you had hundreds of thousands of dollars to play around with. But
these days,
and as you've been in broadcast, you know that you just need the bare minimum for voiceover. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to have a humongous setup of any kind. And I think that's really important. So thanks for mentioning that. And a shout out to any gearheads that were kind of like going, but, you know. But
we've just saved them a couple of thousand of dollars, you know. And that's not to say that there's expenses associated with this. You know, you really do have to, along with time and effort, dedicate, you know, at least, I'm going to guess, I know what I spent to set things up, cost about $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Not insignificant, not huge, but not insignificant. And I wanted to make sure that I was able to provide good quality voice. And so I bought what was necessary to do that, but no more.
Right.
And even to this day, I walk past Long and McQuaid and go, okay, look away.
Yeah, don't go in there. Don't. Yeah, I get you. That store is dangerous in a good way, but dangerous because I sit down at one of those baby grand pianos. I'm like, ho. Like, no, probably not coming home with me today. No.
Yes, you're a trained singer. I think people should know. I think that you studied music in school, correct,
I did,
Stephanie?
Yes. It's now called Western University, but it was the University of Western Ontario when I was there. So, a wonderful music school, but yes, absolutely. I think that anyone coming into voiceover, be it from music or broadcast or theater, you have like built-in chops. Like, you honestly do. And I think that you take it for granted. Some people, they just think, oh, I'm artistic. But it's like, you've got so much going on for you. A lot of people have to learn or have to become, you know, a little more aware of their instrument than people like you did. So
that's the key word, instrument. It's learning how to use your voice. And I would touch on that later if we wanted to. But, you know, people talk about having a good voice. Well, everybody's got a good voice. And the practical matter is you don't really need a good, in the traditional sense, voice to do what we do. You have to, however, know it's an instrument. And like any instrument, you have to learn how to care for it and how to develop it and, you know, basically play it like an instrument.
Yeah.
And your singing would be terrific as an asset for doing what we do, because so much of the way we express ourselves is in musical terms. And when we speak, it's almost like a series of notes. It's a melody. And we try to, just like in music, avoid repetition as much as we can, working within a range, a key, so to speak. And so I would think that your voice training would be a terrific asset for voice work, for, you know, commercial voice work.
It certainly is useful. And I'm not using my voice in exactly the way that I thought I would. I actually, at one point in my life, thought that I would be the next Celine Dion. But, you know, that was a goal of a young teenager, not necessarily where you end up, because your life changes. Things happen and you go down a different path. But the important thing is that you've got your voice and you know you're going to use it for something. It's just what? And so every day you must wake up being like, oh my gosh, what's coming at me now? We've got auditions from here, from there.
And it's good though.
Yeah, it's all different. And I'm just thinking, because you come from a broadcast background, so you emphasize the importance of studying and having coaches and invest more in that area. But how did you kind of find a way as a former broadcast professional to kind of leave the announcer voice at the door, if you will, and then become a voice actor?
Gosh, I hope I never really had what you would call an announcer voice. But I know that that's a struggle for a lot of radio announcers. Maybe not so much television, which is a little more face-to-face. I guess my approach to the business has evolved, along with my voice for that matter, from chasing every project to where I am now, a place where hours of experience and dollars invested are measured by thousands. I don't have to swing at every pitch that crosses my plate, so I'm able to focus on projects that appeal to me and follow, you know, the GVAA rules and rates. If I shouldn't say rules, but suggested rates. And if those suggested rates aren't compatible with what the voice seller is offering, well, I just go hiking with my girlfriend, who happens to be a star on the development side of the industry. So my job is causing them to remember me in terms of clients. Sometimes opportunities come along simply, you know, by appearing on a client's radar, just by being in their inbox.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a quick, reliable solution to their challenge of finding a voice. And the clients I've worked with in the past lead to working relationships in the present.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting that coming from TV, it's not necessarily as much of the announcer voice that people are kind of prone to having as it is in, say, radio. So would you say more of your colleagues from radio have had a harder time transitioning to voiceover than those in television?
I don't know if I could characterize with a word like most or even many, but I know it can be a challenge. You're presenting differently, and it's sometimes hard to break out of that tune,
right?
So to speak, going back to the singing analogy again. So, you know, a little bit of training, coaching can go a long way breaking those kind of habits, you know.
No, absolutely.
Essentially, what you're trying to do is be yourself.
Yeah.
You know? But sometimes that's the hardest part of the job.
Yeah, just like, and how so? Explain.
Well, you're really making yourself vulnerable by being yourself. And if it's a product that you're selling, that's one thing. But if the product is you, you're not presenting a pair of shoes to the client. You're presenting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't accept it, you have to have a fairly thin skin. Now, in terms of voices that you might use on a radio, okay, say it's a station that plays metal, you're going to have a much tougher read, just like you would as a voice talent, every day on the air,
mm-hmm,
in this kind of rock format than you would if you were doing adult contemporary music, as it was known at the time. So, you know, the delivery is different. It's just having to coach yourself out of this one area, you know, of delivery that perhaps you've been using in radio,
mm-hmm,
into a more versatile, flexible form of communicating that is more naturally centered.
Right. Yeah. And being yourself is also what makes you stand out, makes you different, makes someone
everywhere
say, oh, I didn't think of it that way, or I like how that talent positioned, mm-hmm, this read. Because if you're reading it, you know, I'm just thinking some method acting, like if you can bring your own experience into a read, then it's something that no one else has had. You know, no
That's
one
so
has
true.
Been you. And just thinking back to Don LaFontaine, who I know a lot of our listeners
That's
are familiar
way
with.
Looking way back.
It is looking. I know he's been gone since 2008. It's crazy to think it's been that
In
long.
In a world.
Oh, wow. Good. That's good. I think I don't know if that would have worried him too much, because he was always saying,
No,
you know,
I don't think he would have been worried about that.
No, but it's just so funny because what he would say is, you're working in the service of the words. I'm paraphrasing him now, but your voice is in the service of the words. But he also believed that no one person could be somebody else. So, like, because everyone in the room, I remember it was Voice 2007, James and Penny put the conference on, and Don LaFontaine was the featured guest who was there for everyone to meet. And I met him, and there was a tremendously long line of hundreds of people waiting to meet Don, and he met every single one of us and signed autographs and took pictures. And thank you, Kara Edwards, for taking the picture of me with Don, because that's the only reason why I have a picture of it. But, you know, it was just something that he would say is like, you know, like, no one else is going to be the next Don LaFontaine. Like, you can't.
True.
Because he would say things like, no one's had my experiences. No one has lived the life that I've lived. You don't think like I do. Like, this sort of thing where the things that made Don made him Don.
Mm-hmm.
And
the industry was different back then too, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, you know, and I take your point. You're most three-dimensional if you are being yourself. And most three-dimensional makes you the most vivid, makes you the most likely to stand out with all your flaws, you know, but it's all there. Flaws are beautiful, especially nowadays in voice, where authenticity is everything.
It is absolutely everything, because it people can tell if you aren't in it, you know, if you're not feeling what you're reading. And like, that is just, I think, authenticity, being genuine, auditioning and doing the work that you feel connected to is the best way forward for any talent, because then you feel good about the work, but the audience will also get so much more from it. And the client will actually hire you because you'll be compelling enough to share their message.
You stop time when they hear your voice in amongst, you know, the 200 other short clips of their script. And suddenly you stand out. Stop time, as one of my coaches described it. It's your job to stop time.
I like that.
When they hear your voice.
Wow. Yeah.
And you're most likely to do that by being authentic, being yourself.
Exactly. I know everybody on the casting side of things knows when you hear the voice that will book it. Like, you just know. Like, I remember one of the earliest projects that was done in the professional services, managed service part of Voices, and when we first started that arm of the company. And anyway, but, you know, just listening through some of those voices and making a short list, like, you could tell who was going to book it, more than likely. You know, you just know that there's a... And so one of the stories we have from those days is there was a job looking for a male and a female talent to voice separate, you know, PSAs and spots and whatnot. And in any way, like, the client listened to the women's voice, like the female voice talent who auditioned for it, and listened to the male voice talent who auditioned for the other ones. And they liked the one lady so much that they actually rewrote their other spot. And they made it for her, and she booked both the jobs. She only auditioned for one. But, you know, it's just like...
I hope she got paid for both roles.
She absolutely did. Absolutely did. But it just reminds me of how when you know it when you hear it. Like, if it's the right person, the right voice, the right delivery, it's going to connect with that audience. You know, these clients, sometimes they will make big changes to a project, or they will, like, invent work for you, which I know that that's something I was wondering. Like, you create some of your own opportunities, too, as an entrepreneur. And and being a senior voice in your retirement years, like, how do you find opportunities are? Like, obviously, you've got a lot of streams of opportunity coming to you. But, yeah you find that there's a lot of interesting work out there for seniors?
There is. I mean, you know, instead of senior, I think of seasoned, a seasoned voice.
Yes, I like
that. That exudes experience and gravitas and reliability and, you know, all the things that, you know, come with age and experience. I have found that the best way of looking at this is like an orchestra. An orchestra is made up of many, many wonderful instruments. And I consider myself a French horn amongst flutes and trumpets. So, and there's a lot of French horns in the industry as well, still making a living, and very much so. There are obviously going to be more calls for a younger, lighter voice in a lot of products. But I'm fortunate because, for one thing, and this is an important thing to remember, for anyone of any age, you're not trying to corner the market. You're trying to put your cup under the waterfall and get your share of the business. There's lots of work for everybody in every age range, whether you're a young voice or whether you're a seasoned voice. It's all there. It's a big, big bazaar, as I call it, a great big open air market, especially if you're working with the online casting sites. You know, there's no need to worry about how old you are. Get in, have fun, work hard.
I like it. That is really great advice for anyone of any age and of any seasoned voice. I like that. I really like that. I was like, what degree of seasoning do we have here?
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to suggest a euphemism here. I mean, you know, let's face it. I'm not 25. I don't want to be doing roles that are meant for a 25-year-old.
Right.
I'd have to fold myself up into a pretzel mentally and probably vocally to even approach that. I don't want it.
No.
You know, I want stuff that appeals to a seasoned audience who appreciates a seasoned voice.
I love that. I do. I'm going to start saying seasoned voice instead of senior voice, because it brings so much more, so much richness to it, I think. Mm. So thank you so much for sharing with us today, Brad. You've mentioned your website earlier before, but did you want to tell us again, just so that people know how to find you?
Oh, I'd be happy to. It's avsvoice.com is where you can find me. And anyone is more than welcome to drop me a line at brad@avsvoice.com if you have any questions or comments or want to, you know, clarify some of the points that I mentioned. And I think a big topic for discussion is rates and usage. And I hope you'll invite me back again, Stephanie, and we can talk more about that very, very big topic that really pertains more than anything to the online casting sites.
Well, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back on the show again, Brad. And yeah, we'd definitely have to catch up with you again in Toronto or here at Voices.
I'd love it. Have a great day.
You too. And that's the way we saw the world through the lens of voiceover this week. Thank you for listening and for following the show. Thank you also to our special guest, Brad Avenue, or Brad Giffen, depending on how you know him, for sharing his stories and his tips for how to enjoy a career in voiceover when you're retired, and how to use all those amazing skills that you may have from broadcast and singing to make it all happen. For Voices, I'm Stephanie Cicerelli. Vox Talk is produced by Jeff Bremner. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next week. Thank you.